Welcome to the Peak Work Performance Summit, where we talk about scientifically proven ideas that make us smarter, healthier, and more productive. My name is Ron Friedman, and my guest today is author Rory Vaden. Rory is an award-winning speaker and the author of two fantastic books on procrastination and time management, Take the Stairs, a New York Times bestseller, and most recently, Procrastinate on Purpose, 5 Permissions to Multiply Your Time. In the interview you're about to watch, Rory tells us why he believes everything we've been taught about time management is wrong. He'll share his tips for multiplying your free time and explain why the biggest danger to getting things done isn't lack of motivation, it's something he calls priority dilution. Toward the end of the interview, you'll hear Rory discuss his background as a competitive public speaker. He'll tell us the one thing he wished he knew about public speaking before he started and how that insight eliminated any fear of getting up on stage. Without further ado, here's my interview with Rory Vaden.
Well, Rory Vaden, thank you so much for joining us at the summit. I really enjoyed your book, Procrastinate on Purpose. And you start that book with a really bold assertion. You say everything you know about time management is wrong. Tell us how so.
Well, here's the thing is a lot of the cliches that you hear about time management, they just have either been completely discarded or they've been radically updated by the modern thinker. And in order to really understand it, you know, just to take you on a lightning fast journey in the history of time management theory, era one time management thinking developed in like the 50s and 60s as a body of work. We sometimes call it one dimensional thinking because it was all about efficiency, right? And that was the initial strategy. Like I need to do things faster and then I would have more margin. I'd have more time left over. And then in later on, about 20 years later, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Stephen Covey, brilliant guy, amazing, right? Legend in this business, writes a book that changes the world, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And in that book, we really pay, you know, attribute and credit to Dr. Covey for introducing us to two-dimensional thinking. And so what two-dimensional thinking is where the y-axis was importance and the x-axis was urgency. And that was really a game changer because Dr. Covey taught us all that not all tasks are created equal, and he gave us this scoring system to prioritize our time. But and prioritizing is good. Prioritizing means to focus first on what matters most. But as great as that book was, and as helpful as that was to our thinking, I mean, just think about this for a second. You know, Ron, that book. Do you know what year the book was published?
It was in the 70s.
It was 1980. It was 1989 is actually when it was published. Okay. But think about how different the world today is compared to 1989. I mean, in 1989, there's no internet. There's cell phones, no Google, no social media. You still had to get off the couch to change the channel, you know, in a lot of cases. And yet a lot of us still use Dr. Covey's, you know, methodology as the primary way, and prioritizing is our primary strategy. And you cannot solve today's time management problems using yesterday's time management thinking. So what multipliers do, or these people that we started to study, is we said, like, how do the ultra performers of today treat time, and do they think differently? And while most people are still thinking in terms of two dimensions of urgency and importance, multipliers have adapted a third dimension, what we call significance, the significance calculation. And if importance is how much does something matter, and urgency is how soon does something matter, then significance is how long is something going to matter. In other words, how does this play out tomorrow and the next day and the next day? And what multipliers realize, they had this big insight. While the rest of us are running around frantic, trying to squeeze everything into one day because we are only making calculations of importance and urgency. And so we ask, what is the most important thing I have to do today? Multipliers don't ask that question. They ask a completely different question, which is, how can I use my time in a way today that creates more time tomorrow? That's the significance calculation. And the subtitle of the book, of course, 5 Permissions to Multiply Your Time. So in one sentence, Ron, the way that you multiply time is by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that create more time tomorrow.
Very interesting. And so one of the traps that a lot of people fall into by using that two-dimensional thinking, as you write about in your book, is priority dilution. What is priority dilution and how does it happen?
Yeah, priority dilution is fascinating. And the term comes from our first book, Take the Stairs. And Take the Stairs was about overcoming classic procrastination, right? Which is consciously delaying what you know you should be doing. And then we talked about a second type of procrastination, another term that we kind of coined, which is creative avoidance. And creative avoidance is creating stuff for yourself to do so that you can do that as a way of avoiding doing the thing you know you really should be doing that you don't feel like doing. Well, Take the Stairs was really about those. Those are kind of the common types of procrastination. And we just casually mentioned this priority dilution. And what priority dilution is it's the new procrastination because it is the chronic overachievers procrastination. It has, unlike creative avoidance or classic procrastination, priority dilution has nothing to do with being lazy or apathetic or disengaged, but it is the same net result that we leave the office at the end of the day with our most significant tasks left unchecked. And it's not because we're lazy. It's actually because we're chronic overachievers. We're movers and shakers. We're do-gooders. We're checklisters. And as our star rises, we have more and more priorities that get put on our plate. More and more responsibility enters into our purview. And so naturally, our core priorities start to dilute. And so while somebody struggling with creative avoidance is really battling distraction, somebody struggling with priority dilution is battling a life of constant interruption, always falling victim, you know, to whatever is the latest thing, the most recent email. And we fall into this trap of trying to do things so fast and trying to just do lots of things. And what multipliers do, the people who break free of priority dilution, multipliers realize that today success is no longer related to the volume of tasks that we complete, but rather simply the significance of them.
Let's make this actionable. Let's say I've hired you as a consultant. You're going to come into my office. We're going to sit down together in the morning and organize my to-do list so that I can maximize my significance. What are we going to do first?
Okay. So first of all, to-do lists are dangerous. I think to-do lists, multipliers aren't as concerned about their to-do list as they are about their not to-do list. Uh-huh. The next generation of time management is much more about deciding what you don't do than it is about deciding what you do take action on. We call that eliminate. It's the first of the five stages in the focus funnel, which we can talk about in a second. But if you are using a to-do list, the danger of a to-do list and the danger of a calendar are one and the same. And that danger is that they cause you to stop thinking. Now, that's also the benefit, right? The benefit of a calendar is you stop thinking. You put it on the calendar, and then when that time comes up, you just do it. And that's initially a great advantage for us, but it becomes a limiting weakness. It's kind of a what got you here won't get you there thing. I know you have Marshall here, you know, in the lineup. And that's a great example because while initially that's an advantage, not thinking is the danger. And what multipliers do is they are perpetually reprioritizing. We live in a world that you can plan your week on Sunday night. That's fine. That's great. But it's a little bit antiquated because the world moves so fast that what you have planned for Thursday on Sunday could be the priorities could dramatically shift between Sunday and Thursday. We live in a dynamic, fast-paced, ever-changing world. I mean, really, what you have planned for Monday morning can change. And some people resist that and it creates stress. Multipliers navigate that and they allow for this perpetual reprioritization. And they're using something called the focus funnel, which we'll kind of go through. But if you, to answer your question, okay, so I just went on a big rant about not answering your question, but to answer your question, it doesn't mean that you can't have a to-do list. But the way that I would say, look at your to-do list is ask yourself the question, which of these things, don't ask yourself, which of these can I get done today? Don't ask yourself, which of these takes the least amount of time so I can knock it out right now? Instead ask, which one of these things, if I do it today, will create more time or more results for me tomorrow and the next day and the next day. I guess you want me to give a couple practical examples?
Yeah, that sounds great. So what you're saying here is that the way we want to prioritize the work that we're doing is by focusing on the thing that's going to generate more free time in the future.
Exactly, because there's a great limitation to prioritizing that nobody ever talks about. And again, I don't mean to tread on any of the amazing work that's been done by the productivity thinkers. In fact, I think that's just the nature of how things happen as we evolve and we learn from the people before us. So prioritizing is good. Learning how to focus first on what matters most is still good, but there's a limitation to it, right? Prioritizing is like taking item number 7 on your to-do list and it's bumping it up to number 1. And that's fine, but it does nothing in and of itself that to actually create more time. It's actually more like you're borrowing time. You're borrowing time from one activity maybe from 9 activities on your to-do list to instead spend it on one. And you still need to know how to do that. You still need to prioritize, but the item that you prioritize is chosen based on a different set of thinking. The next level of results requires the next level of thinking. And that is the ultimate litmus test for how to multiply time. So if managing your time is trying to do things efficiently and doing things fast, prioritizing your time is focusing first on what matters most, but multiplying your time is spending time on things today that create more time tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you point out in your book is that really this requires the first step to multiplying your time requires a shift in mindset. We need to stop thinking about efficiencies and getting more done and start focusing a little bit more of our attention on activities that we can eliminate. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this enters as a great segue into the focus funnel, because then we go, how do we take this kind of psychological level or this principle of spend time on things today that create more time tomorrow and apply it. And the focus funnel is our attempt to create a visual depiction that codifies the actual thought process that multipliers use when they are going through their day and how they perpetually reprioritize it. And if you picture a funnel, at the top of the funnel, you have all the tasks coming in, all the stuff. And the first question that multipliers simply ask is can this be eliminated? And then if it can't be eliminated, it drops down and we can talk about what happens next. But eliminate is by far where we have the widest swath of opportunity to immediately create more time, because anything you say no to today saves you time tomorrow, because it's something that you're not doing that you would have been doing. And, one of the other big parts of the Procrastinate on Purpose book that I think is really different, really, really radically different from anything you've ever heard on time management. And this goes to your first question about why we say everything you know about time management is wrong, because everything you've ever heard about time management is all tips and tricks, tools and technology, calendars and checklists. It's all, apps and ideas to save you time, organize time. It's all logical. But one of the things that we realize is that today, time management isn't just logical. It's emotional. And our feelings of guilt and fear and anxiety and worry, those things dictate how we spend our time much more even than our calendar does, because we get pulled in these different directions and we respond as emotional human beings to what's happening in our environment, not just what is on our calendar or on our to-do list. And so each of the 5 permissions, or the subtitle, 5 permissions to multiply your time, each stage in the focus funnel has a corresponding permission. And in the eliminate stage is what we call the permission to ignore. The permission to ignore. It's basically that the reason that we are all overwhelmed, it's not anyone else's fault. It's your fault. You are the problem. You're the one that is saying yes to everything. You're saying yes to too much. And why are you saying yes? Probably because you're just like me. Probably because you're a people pleaser and you want to be an overachiever and you want to help people and you want to do great work. And so you don't want to say no. And so we, at least for me, Ron, I was trying to go through life without ever saying no. And then one of the multipliers that we profiled in the book said to me, Rory, that is the dumbest thing I have ever heard anybody say. Because anytime that you say yes to one thing, you are simultaneously saying no to an infinite number of others. And so it's futile to go through life without saying no. You're always saying no to something. You are either consciously saying no to the things that don't matter, or you end up saying yes to the things that don't matter, and you unconsciously end up saying no to the things that do matter. And when you come to that realization, when you come to that place, you develop the foundation of the permission to ignore. And once you have the permission to ignore, you realize not every email deserves a response. Not every meeting deserves your attendance. Not every idea deserves your execution. You have to develop the permission to eliminate. And we sometimes refer to this as the sculptor's principle, because sculptors are amazing artists. Most artists create art by what they add to a painting, like to a blank canvas. But sculptors realize perfection is achieved not only when nothing more can be added, but when nothing more can be taken away.
That's a powerful metaphor. So what can people do to develop the courage to say no to others? I mean, it's one thing to know on a logical level that saying yes to everyone dilutes our priorities and prevents us from getting the right things done. But the experience of saying no to others or ignoring their email, that can be a painful experience in the short term. What can we do to make that experience less distasteful?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I don't know how to instantly cure the fear necessarily. I'll give you two ideas. One of them is logical, right? And that is realizing it. The logical part is think longer term. Right. That's the logical part is, if I say yes to this right now, what might I be saying no to? And most of us don't think that way. Again, multipliers think differently. That's actually the significance calculation. It's thinking longer term. It's not just falling victim to that emotion, which often in this case is guilt. Sometimes I feel like I have to say yes. I can't say no. So that's the logical part of it. All right. Now let me tell you the emotional strategy. The emotional strategy is that you can say no and still be nice. You can say no and still be nice. You can become amazing at telling people no. And you know, you read the book about the author that I approached over the course of 6 years trying to get an endorsement, and I never got an endorsement, but I got handwritten letters. I got in-person people coming to tell me no. And it's this story about the author still has never said yes to me. So I'm still working on it. But I learned a great lesson that you can say no and still be nice. So think about that. This is something we started doing. Here's a good example. I've been speaking for over 15 years, and speaking was originally my core business. Southwestern Consulting, our company now, we do sales coaching, and we have about 115 team members. We started it from scratch. There were four of us, and now we have about 115 people, and we do one-on-one coaching, really sales coaching and marketing coaching. But the speaking is what people have known me for, because that's how I got my start. Well, over the years, my speaking fee has increased pretty dramatically. And so I get people that maybe we talked to or approached 7 or 8 years ago about having me come speak. And now they respond and say, "Hey, we'd love to have you speak." And they just don't have the budget, right? Like they don't have the money. They don't keep track of speaker fees and stuff. And so we can't take every opportunity we get asked to speak at. So I always felt really bad about that, right? Like I always felt guilty. It's like somebody is here inviting me the compliment of coming in, and I can't do it. And so what we do is we send a no package. We send a care package to people who legitimately have a conference, and they legitimately reach out to us, and then we can't take it. So we put all these little gifts together, and we send it to their team, and that it's just made me feel a lot better. So what is your no package? You know, see if you can put together something. And in this case of the author, they sent me a handwritten letter. And a letter encouraging me about my journey on being an author, encouraging me about the hard work it takes. They shared a little bit about their story, and they did all of that after the first line was, "We regret to inform you that we cannot give endorsements to work that we're not intimately acquainted with, and given the stack of things on my desk clamoring for my attention, I'm not able to dedicate that necessary time. But let me give you a moment of encouragement."
Yeah, I think that's a great programmed response that ends the interaction in a positive way. And so I love your tip about going to people who can't afford your speaking fees. But now let me put you on the spot a little bit.
All right.
What do you do if the person you want to say no to is in your organization or even your manager? Do you have any suggestions around how we can get out of activities that are not in our best long-term interest, where it's more than really just guilt that's standing in the way?
Yeah. See, now, Ron, you're just going off script. See, now you're asking the hard questions. So it's a delicate, let's talk about if it's your boss. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cause that's the most like common, well, you can't just tell your boss like, no, like the heck with you. So it's delicate, right? If you enjoy having your job and you work in an environment where you have a boss, here's what I would say. Help your boss think longer term also. And the way that you can do that is don't tell your boss no. This is kind of a customer service thing also, right? Like you don't tell people no. What you do is you give them options. And by giving them options, they're kind of in control, but really you're kind of in control. And so if my boss is telling me, hey, I need to have this done, the chronic overachiever response is to go, okay, I'll just find a way to do it. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go home. I'll work till midnight. I'll stay up till 2 a.m. I'll ignore my family. Like just, I want to be a trooper. I'm a hard worker. And, you know, and there's value to that. And I don't want to discount the value of hustle. That's what the Take the Stairs book is all about. But there's also a limitation to that, which is that can burn you out. And over time, if that's repeated, we talk about Take the Stairs having harvest seasons. There's periods in your life where you need to have a harvest season, but your life should not be a full-time harvest season in one direction. So with your boss, what I would say is, you know, okay, Ron, so I'm happy to do that for you. I need your help with something. Here are the 10 things that I have that I am working on. Can you help me prioritize what order would you like me to complete these in for you? It's kind of the same. It's the same mentality you would use on yourself. If you're a small business owner, you have to make that significance calculation. Because you know who your boss is for all of us? Your boss is today. The boss is that you only have a limited amount of time and you got to get all this stuff done. So all of us have the boss of time. Time is our boss. And the way you break free of that is you realize, you go, I actually don't just have today. I have tomorrow and the next day and the next day. So if I'm coaching myself, I say, okay, self, what is the thing that I can do that really will matter in the long term? If I'm working for somebody, then I'm going to say, look, you prioritize for me. Here are the things on my purview. You tell me what you want to do, but this is how much time I have. These are the priorities. And so if I am the employee, I'm going to invite and allow my boss to prioritize for me. And that is how I get around from having to always be burned out and stressed and feeling like I have to do everything. And if you have a boss that just says, well, you need to have all of those things done by tomorrow, then quit.
Just that's it. Quit.
That's it. Say no. Seriously, your health and your stress and your family is not worth your job. It is not there are things that are more important. And to the extent, you know, to the extent you're hustling and you have a harvest season and you're fighting and you're taking the stairs, right? There's periods where we have to do things we don't want to do. That's what Take the Stairs is all about. But it should not be always. It shouldn't be forever. It should be for a season. And if that season is never ending, then at some point you got to say no. And you always have that freedom to say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go find something else. We live in a world where you can start your own business in 10 minutes. You can have a website in a day and a blog and, you know, a social media. Like, so you eventually quit. Now I'm not encouraging everyone to quit, but I am encouraging you. And look, most of the people watching are probably not the employee. Most of the people watching this are probably the boss. You're probably the leader. That's why you're here. You're the mover and shaker. And so you want to learn how to multiply time, not just for you, but for your whole organization. And you want to prioritize for your people. And you tell them, I want you spending time on the things that multiply our results. I want you spending time on the things that multiply our time. That gets rid of bureaucracy. That gets rid of mundane routine. That gets rid of just going through the motions of doing things that the way we've always done them. And it creates a multiplier culture. A procrastinate on purpose, as we call it, POP, it creates a POP culture for your organization. I mean, imagine if everybody around you was spending time on things today that would make tomorrow better and the next day and the next day. That's how you create exponential growth. That's what leadership is.
So let's talk a little bit more about how we can multiply our time. So the second strategy, after we've eliminated all the things that perhaps we shouldn't be spending time on, start saying no to some more things than we perhaps have been in the past, we need to start automating. And you talk about this idea that automation is to your time what compounding interest is for your money. So what is automation and how do we put it to use in our lives?
Yeah, that was the biggest insight for me personally in the whole journey. And I have to tell you, Ron, I was writing a story about a guy that I spent time with who is one of the wealthiest people I know. And he was explaining to me that how wealthy people think differently about money. And he was basically saying when most people walk in to buy a coffee, they ask themselves, you know, do I have $5? And what a wealthy person asks is not, do I have $5? A wealthy person goes through a whole different thought process, realizing that if they spend $5 on that coffee, that's $5 they're not investing. And if they were to invest that $5 instead of spend it, and let's say they got an average rate of return of like 8% over 30 years, $5 invested at 8% for 30 years would come out to be worth about $50. So a rich person says, they don't ask themselves, do I want this coffee or do I have $5? They say, is this $5 coffee worth $50 to me 30 years from now? Which to me was crazy. I was like, what? That's nuts. I've never heard, you know, I was raised at a trailer park. I mean, I was born in a trailer park. I didn't come from a lot of money and I had never heard that. Well, I'm writing that story and literally I type the words and I didn't even realize this until I'm looking at the screen. I was like, whoa, automation is to your time what compounding interest is to your money. And let me give you a practical example. If I told you, Ron, I said, hey, do you happen to have an extra 2 hours open in your day to day where you could just set up online bill pay? I mean, you'd probably be like, no. I don't have 2 hours open in my day. I can't remember the last day that I was at work where I just had 2 hours of open space with nothing assigned to that time. And if I did have 2 hours open, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't use it to set up online bill pay. I would probably do something that mattered more. That's how most of us think. But here's how a multiplier thinks. A multiplier realizes that if I take 2 hours today to set up online bill pay and doing that saves me 30 minutes every single month from paying my bills, then after just 4 months' time, I will have broken even on that investment. And every month thereafter, I will get something that we call in Procrastinate on Purpose, we call it ROTI, return on time invested. Because anything you create a process for today saves you time tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And now you have that system doing that thing for you. So that's the significance calculation. But absent the significance calculation, I am living in a paradigm of one day. I only have this 24 hours. And so I go, I don't have 2 hours to spend doing that. I don't. And so I never do it. And so I always do the things that I can cross off, the things that I can check off my to-do list because I get my little shot of dopamine and I feel like I'm productive, like I actually did something. But yet I am always in that constant rat race of sprinting, 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 just like somebody who's spending money. Whereas an investor of money goes, if I stop spending money for a little while and I invest it, it's going to grow, you know, compounding interest turns my money into more money. Well, just like a multiplier realizes that automation turns my time into more time. And you know, we have great examples of, Infusionsoft was one of the things that we used that changed our business. It's like, I never have that time if I'm only evaluating in the paradigm or the construct of one day. But if I'm evaluating over a year, I go, I can't afford not to spend that 2 hours. It's stupid not to do it because then every month I'm losing time. And the sooner I make that investment, and that's what the second permission is. It's the permission to invest, the permission to say, I know I have a bunch of fires. That's fine. Here's what I've learned about fires. No matter how fast I fight fires today, there's going to be an equal number of fires tomorrow. I can fight fires all day. I can answer email all day long and not ever be caught up. It's if I get my inbox to zero, tomorrow there's going to be new emails, unless I create a system or a process that prevents that email from ever coming in. Unless I create a process that takes care of that task in the future so that I don't have to. That's the significance calculation. And the significance calculation changes everything.
I love that example of bill pay because it's so practical. And that thinking about automating different processes in our lives doesn't just apply to the way we work. It also applies to our family life. So yeah. You point out in the book that if you're running a household, you're essentially running a small business. Can you give us some practical examples of processes that we can automate in our home life to create more time with our families?
Yeah, well, I think, if you can't eliminate an activity and you can't automate an activity, then it drops down to the bottom of the funnel, which is, can I delegate this? In other words, can someone else do it? And I think delegate is also, we call it the permission of imperfect, but it is also a permission to invest because you have to invest time training somebody how to do the task. And we can talk about the 30X rule if you want and make this empirical argument. But when it comes to delegation is kind of like, it's almost like automation, but instead of with a system, it's with a person. So when you look at automation in your personal life, if you look at automation in a business, you're talking about things like how you structure the flow of ideas and feedback from your team and feedback loops from your customers and CRMs and expense reports and approval processes and budgets and stuff like that. And definitely email marketing for the small business owner and that. When you look at it for your personal life, it's things like online bill pay. It can be things like automating the backup of your computer, right? Where you take the time to invest to go, okay, rather than having to manually remember to back up my computer onto an external hard drive, or even worse, running the risk of not backing it up and someone spills coffee on my machine and I'm screwed, I take the time to set up something in the cloud that is backing up my computer on a regular basis. And now I don't have to worry about it. Now it's gone. Do I have an hour and a half today to learn how to do that? No, I don't. But if I do it, it might save me 50 or 100 hours of someone spilling coffee on my computer and me trying to recover all of that stuff. It could be as simple, and I do believe this, anybody who runs a family runs a business. It could be as simple as a chore chart around the house. Because a chore chart prevents the arguments and the battles about whose turn it is to take out the trash and whose turn it is to do the dishes. And that's just a really simple thing that if you do the thinking once, then it saves you from having to do that thinking again. Mm-hmm. We automate all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's a cross between automate and delegate, but I started to notice that when I go to the grocery store, I buy 90% of what I buy is the same thing every single time. So what do? We committed that to a list and then we gave it to somebody and now we have someone go shopping. And you go, well, maybe you say, I don't have enough money to hire a personal shopper. Well, I didn't either. But you have to realize that you're always paying someone. You're either paying yourself at your rate of pay to do something or you're paying somebody else at their rate of pay. And again, we live in a world with Craigslist and Fiverr and so many ways to find people who need work. Our personal assistant is a stay-at-home mom, and she's running the kids around all day anyways. And so it's like she can stop in at Target and she can stop in at Home Depot and she does all this stuff for us. And it's just in the course of her day, she's making money. We're creating jobs. She has a blast doing it. It gives her something to do, and it's a way to automate. So you'll find examples. Look, the worst thing I could do is tell you everything that you should do, because multiplying time and procrastinating on purpose is not about telling you what to do. It's about teaching you how to think. And what that's the magic is learning how to think. If you start making the significance calculation, you'll be able to figure out on your own to-do list what matters. You probably will immediately, as you're sitting here listening, go, gosh, I've had 100 ideas that I've never taken the time to do because I've never had time to do it. And yet, if I do what Rory's talking about here and I start making the significance calculation, I'm going to go do those things. Because while I don't have time for it today, over the long term, it's going to create time. And so it's not about telling you what to do. It's about teaching us how to think.
Mm-hmm. Now, in fairness, I'd imagine some people watching this have perhaps thought about getting a personal shopper or maybe even thought about bringing someone into their home to cook their dinners every night.
Clean the house,
right? But they've resisted because of something that you identify in your first book, Take the Stairs, called the pain paradox. Mm. What is the pain paradox and how do we overcome it?
Yeah. So, you know, the classic sort of signature story is that I grew up in Colorado, and in Colorado, we are famous for the Rocky Mountains. And so to the western part of the state, right, like we have the Rocky Mountains. But a lot of people don't realize this. To the eastern part of the state, Colorado is divided almost exactly in half. And we also in the east have the Great Kansas Plains. Well, because of that unique topographical landscape, Colorado has both buffalo and cows. And we're one of the only places in the world that have buffaloes and cows. And there's a great lesson to be learned for leaders and anyone looking to create more time and anybody just wanting to be a multiplier and ultra performer from studying the way that these two creatures respond to storms. When storms come, these storms always brew from the west. And then what happens is they roll out towards the east. And what cows do is very natural. A cow can sense that a storm is coming from this direction. And so a cow will run east to try to get away from the storm. The problem, though, is if you know anything about cows, you know they're not real fast. And so as the cows try to run east, the storm goes right along with them. And so instead of outrunning the storm, they actually run with the storm, which maximizes. It's tragic. It's like it maximizes the amount of pain and time and frustration they experience from that storm, which is so stupid. But here's the thing, Ron. Humans do the exact same thing all the time. We spend so much of our lives constantly trying to avoid the inevitable challenges that come along with the difficult circumstances that our very own choices have led us to be in. I can speak from personal experience here. People who are in debt, we constantly try to find ways around paying our bills. People who are unhealthy, we're always making rationalizations for why it doesn't work or why it won't matter or how I've already tried. People who are struggling in their marriage are often avoiding the difficult but meaningful conversations that need to be had to reconcile that relationship. And the great insight that ultra performers have made that most of us have not, at least not consciously, is multipliers and ultra performers, I use that term interchangeably now, they realize problems that are procrastinated on are only amplified. Problems procrastinated on are amplified. Waiting always makes it worse. What buffalo do is very unique for the animal kingdom. So buffalo wait for the storm to cross like right over the crest of the peak of the mountaintop. And as the storm rolls over the ridge, buffalo will turn and then they will charge directly into the storm. They run at the storm, and by running at the storm, they actually run straight through it, which minimizes the amount of pain and time and frustration they experience from that storm. And, you know, notice, Ron, it's the exact same storm. That's why it's such a great metaphor for all of us, because we're all dealing with similar storms. We all have fires. We all have interruptions. We all have families. We all have kids. We all have, you know, money challenges and financial stuff. We all have this. We don't always get to choose whether or not we have storms. The only choice we have is how we respond to those storms. And more specifically here, when we respond to those storms. And so the paradox principle simply says easy short-term choices lead to difficult long-term consequences. Meanwhile, difficult short-term choices lead to easy long-term consequences. I definitely don't have extra money laying around to hire people, but I have to make the significance calculation. I have to think longer term and realize that if I invest my money into hiring somebody, it's going to give me more time and more money tomorrow. It's going to free me up to do the things that only I can do. And so when you think of the focus funnel, if you can't eliminate it, automate it, or delegate it, then that task falls out the bottom of the funnel. And at that point, you have a task that you know must be done, and it must be done by you. And so there's only one remaining question, which is, must this task be done now, or can it wait until later? If it must be done now, if you know it's something that's going to multiply your time, if you know it's something that only you can do, then that's not eliminate, automate, or delegate. That's what we call concentrate. It's the permission to protect. It's the permission to ignore everything else and say, until I accomplish my next most significant priority, everything else is a distraction. And so I'm going to shut everything down and I'm going to focus on doing the thing that multiplies my time. Now, if it can wait until later, and the answer, can it wait till later, is yes, then that is where it really gets fascinating. And that's where we dive in the book. We invite you, if it can wait until later, that you should let it wait until later. And we call that not eliminate, automate, or delegate, but procrastinate on purpose. We call that pop. And then you pop that activity back to the top of the funnel, at which point it enters into this holding pattern where it cycles through the focus funnel. And then at some point, it will either get eliminated, automated, delegated, or concentrated on. But that buffalo mentality is the mentality you have to have. Once you identify something will multiply your time, you have to give yourself the permission to do it, to invest that time, to charge into the storm.
That's a very interesting metaphor. And I can tell you that it also applies to fear. When you have a fear in your life, if you run away from it, you just prolong that fear. But really, the best approach to overcoming fear is to take it and face it head on. So if you're fearful of flying, you actually want to push yourself to fly a little bit more, because the more you do it, the more exposure you have to it, the less uncomfortable it becomes. The same is true for public speaking. And that leads us to a great segue for this next question, which is that before becoming an author, you actually spent years competing in something called the World Championship of Public Speaking. Tell us about that. Tell us about that experience. How did it come about? And what did you learn in the process of competing about effective public speaking that you didn't know before you started?
Yeah, well, that's funny you asked that question. I don't get asked that a lot. And I would say this, we've done a lot, right? We've applied these principles. Southwestern Consulting is a big company now. And it's easy to look once somebody's down the road and go, oh, well, yeah, you're a New York Times bestseller. You have this big company. You have blah, 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 blah. And so, of course, you're able to do these things. Those are things that are the byproduct of the things that we are talking about. And the journey of speaking is a big one. And by the way, as it relates to systems, just one little note. If you do run a small business and you're interested in like learning about a system, you know, the one that we use, I mentioned, Ron, is Infusionsoft. If you go to infusionsoft.rorivaden.com, there's a free webinar that you can watch, and we tell the story of how we created these systems and how we actually put them into practice. And we actually show you our system, and you can see it, and that's how we grew. So that's at infusionsoft.rorivaden.com. But before that, way before that, before there was a company, before there was a book, before there was any of this research, there was just a silly kid with a dream to be a speaker. And Toastmasters was that journey. Because what happened, Ron, was when I finished grad school, I had spent five summers selling books door to door and recruiting students to sell books door to door in the summer months with Southwestern Advantage. And I had knocked on 20,000 doors and recruited 60 students that were in my organization. And I left that business only because I wanted to speak, but I was a kid. And my problem was I had no credibility in the public world. And so I heard about Toastmasters and this contest they have called the World Championship of Public Speaking. And I thought, wow, maybe if I won the World Championship of Public Speaking, people would listen to me. Maybe that would give me some credibility. And so I went out and I spoke 304 times for free over the course of 18 months. I spent thousands of dollars on coaching courses. I received thousands of evaluations. I read dozens of books, went through all of these classes, and this world championship is 25,000 people who enter from like 90 or 100 countries. And in 2006, I was 22 years old. I made it to the top 10 in the world and I lost. But then in 2007, I studied harder. I practiced more. I went back even with more fight. And in 2007, that was the year I lost again, but I lost higher, as I like to say. I came in second in the world. I was the first runner up for the world championship. And part of that was facilitated an introduction where a man met me. He came up to me and introduced himself to me. His name was Zig Ziglar. And Zig introduced himself to me. And basically I developed a mentorship relationship with Zig, got a chance to know him. And it was all at that same time we were starting Southwestern Consulting, two business partners. One of them was one of the guys that I had met selling books door to door. And then the other one was his best friend growing up, who I ended up marrying. Her name is Amanda. And the three of us and one other guy started this dream. And then we recruited a few of our other best friends. And then it's just been this team effort. But it all started back, going back for me personally. I mean, it really started with selling books at Southwestern, but Toastmasters and learning to speak and just doing it. And it's fine to be scared. Do it scared. It's fine to feel fear, be scared and do it. Just do it scared. All of this stuff is scary at first because you don't know how to do it. But if you just do it scared, you're going to figure it out. You're a powerful person. You're a creative person. We live in a world today where there's more tools available for cheaper and faster than ever before. I think it's easier than ever to be successful, not harder than ever. And we're all lucky. At least I consider myself tremendously lucky to have access to people like you. I mean, this whole conference you're doing, I mean, you're giving this away for free. I mean, there's literally millions of dollars of advice being expended here with all this lineup of people that you've got, Ron, and you're just giving that away. I mean, it's insane. It's just amazing the world that we live in. And I feel lucky. And I'm very grateful for things like Southwestern and Zig Ziglar and, my other mentors, Mark Sanborn, Eric Chester, Dave Averin, some of these people. And I'm just grateful. And you have all the same access to the tools available.
So if we threw you in a time machine, put you in front of that 17-year-old kid and said, you got 2 minutes, tell him anything about public speaking, what would you say other than do it scared?
Oh, well, this is easy. In fact, I don't want to spoil, I guess I'll spoil the premise a little bit. The next book that we are working on is going to be about selling. And the core premise is something that's been around Southwestern for a while. And it applies to selling. It applies to leadership. It applies to public speaking. It applies to parenting. And I think the real secret of overcoming those nerves is this. It's hard to be nervous when your heart's on service. It is hard to be nervous when your heart is on service. When you're thinking about other people, it's almost impossible to be scared. When you're thinking about helping them, it's impossible to feel that fear. Fear is self-centered. You only feel fear when you're thinking about yourself and whether or not you're going to be good enough and whether or not you're going to figure it out. When you're thinking about how can I help other people? Can I use my tools to support these other people? All of that fear, it just falls away. It is hard to be nervous when your heart's on service. And if I would have latched onto that at a younger age, I think I would have been a better leader faster and certainly a better speaker faster. And now what I do, Ron, this is my tip. Before I speak, what I do is I'm not thinking about my speech. I'm not thinking about the slides. I'm not thinking about any of that. What I do is I stand behind the stage and I pick out one or two people in the audience and I look at them and I think about, what would it be like to be that person? I wonder what that person is struggling with. Maybe it is a financial struggle or a relationship battle or a health issue. But I know for sure everybody is struggling with something. And when you get present to that and you think about that, all of your nerves about what you're going to say go away, because then you go and you stand on stage and you're completely there in service of those people.
Well, Rory Vaden, thank you so much for your time. The book is Procrastinating on Purpose.
Thanks, buddy.